cats and kittens, it's time for another episode of Magic the Amateuring.
That's right. It's a show where we bring words to you. What are those words about? Well, some of them are about the game Magic the Gathering.
Some of them are about nothing.
A lot of them are about tangential material.
That's right.
But I'm one of your hosts, Megan.
And I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I don't know why "but" is the conjunction I used there, as though what I had previously been saying and what I just said were at odds with one another.
But is a little known fact about "but," it is the most common conjunction.
What? Are you serious?
No.
Okay, I was about to say, it has to be "and."
It has to be, definitely
it
not "but."
It has to be "and."
But, you know, "but" feels bad about itself. You know, it sounds like a word for a rear end. It just doesn't have the distinguished nature that "and"
exactly.
has.
Exactly. In that great Schoolhouse Rock song, it comes second.
That's right.
And it's never going to be able to live as though it is anything but the middle child of the conjunction family.
Always a bride's "but," never a "and." Speaking of tangents, on this episode, we're going to talk about Amonkhet. See, that was a really bad example of a transition.
And of a tangent.
Correct. But it came out of my mouth. So we're going to go with it.
We're going to have Judge Rob on to tell you all about the different rules interactions, how the mechanics work, specific cards that might be a little bit tricky, and anything else that you might be scratching your head about.
We asked you for questions for Judge Rob, and we'll go to the Twitter mailbag to read them out on the episode to get you ready for the pre-release coming up this weekend.
That's right. We only gave you about 20 minutes, so it's only going to be the questions that happened at the very beginning. If you ask a question later than 20 minutes into this,
I hope we got it.
Yep.
This show, of course, as always, was brought to you by you, the patrons who proudly patronize us at patreon.com/mtacast.
That's right. Thank you so much for making the show possible and for hanging out with us in our Discord chat.
Yes.
And, you know, but...
And, you know,
and, you know, but,
and remember,
or also,
therefore, you are so cool that, you know, that whenever we open cards on Flavor Text Theater on this show,
yes,
patrons are entered into a drawing to win those cards as well as other fabulous prizes.
Whoa.
And here, Megan, I'm holding up some tokens, zombie tokens and a soldier token that are courtesy of the Magic Arts Show that's going to be happening in Las Vegas.
That's
at
right.
Grand Prix Vegas.
Grand Prix Vegas. Get excited to see some magic art in person with your own eyes.
So their Kickstarter is still live. So go over there, help them push up their goal. One of their stretch goals is having cosplayers there and everything.
Ooh.
And we're going to throw some of these tokens into the giveaway this month for Patreon.com.
Very sweet. Another big thank you goes out to Card Kingdom, cardkingdom.com/MTACast. But a great place to
It's really hard to swap those.
You can't.
You just can't.
A great place to get cards, to get singles, to get boosters, to get sleeves, to get binders, to get all of your magic accoutrement.
Yes, but we have more show coming up for you.
Or
do we? Go check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MTACast. But have a good time. Amonkhet pre-release primer. Welcome, Judge Rob. Judge Rob, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you for having me. You didn't see us there.
You're so engrossed in your novel.
It's the fourth best Dune book.
Oh, ooh, wow. Don't tell anybody which one you're reading. Let's have them guess
okay.
which one
right.
you mean.
Oh, wait. You're watching the video. Don't look at the cover.
If you're watching the video, you already know.
Yes.
You audio listeners don't, though. Judge Rob, we bring you here every set to help us through the tougher moments of pre-releases with tricky new card interactions and mechanics. And you have the credentials to be able to tell us what's what. Because
this is true.
Tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
I'm a level 3 judge. I'm regional coordinator for the USA North region. That's why I get the spiffy blue shirt. This is the judge shirt that you don't wear while you're judging. You wear it while doing community stuff at Grand Prix and at judge conferences and stuff.
So are we technically community service?
Yeah, pretty much.
How many hours do you get worked off for this?
snorted.
So honestly, both too many and not enough at the same time.
I would say that's what most people would say about it.
Yep, that's correct. Sounds about right.
So let's start off with the mechanics of Amonkhet, because we've got some spicy new stuff happening this
set. Yeah. I actually kind of want to start with the returning stuff, though.
Sure.
So we have a big deal returning. We have cycling coming back in this set.
Yes.
Which cycling has the distinction of being one of those mechanics that is super exciting, it's not super exciting. It's super functional. It makes limited play better. It makes standard play better. And they used not really a lot of its design space when they first brought it out. And so they keep getting to go back to it.
Yeah, a lot of, I've noticed, older players are super excited because cycling is one of those beloved mechanics, because it helps smooth out your draws and get you mana when you need it, or draw you cards when you need it.
Yeah. And so if you have a card like Curator of Mysteries, which is a 4-4 Sphinx for blue and 2 flies. Yep. Super sweet. But sometimes you don't have all the blue mana you need. Sometimes you don't have 4 mana. It cycles for a single blue. So you can discard it, pay its cycling cost, and you'll draw a card.
Okay.
It's an activated ability. Most things can't counter. We do have a counter spell that can get it in standard.
Disallow?
Yeah, disallow. Can counter activated abilities.
That's right. Abilities. Oh my gosh.
So you could counter the cycling activated ability.
Okay.
They still paid the cost. They still paid a single blue. They still discarded it. They won't draw a card.
Okay.
Curator of Mysteries is another line of text, though. Whenever you cycle or discard another card, scry one. This is a trigger that triggers from cycling, and it happens before you draw the card. Cycling is an activated ability; it goes in the stack, and so you'll scry one before you draw your card.
Ooh. Oh, well, that's nice.
Which with Curator is actually really sweet. It's the way that you want it to be. You want to look at your card, say, "I don't want this," ship it, and then draw a new card to replace it.
Okay,
nice.
And so, Curator of Mysteries and a lot of the cycling trigger cards line up like that, where you get something good before you cycle. There's, in fact, a cycle of cycling cards. Shefet Monitor.
Lizard.
Yeah. He's pretty sweet. It's a 6/5 for green and 5. And that's not terribly great in a lot of limited decks. You like having it there, but you don't necessarily want it all the time. Mm-hmm. So you can pay green and 3 and cycle it to draw a card. But when you cycle Shefet Monitor, you may search your library for a basic land card or a desert card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
So, the question is, which order does that happen in?
And he actually tells you, he reminds you, do this before you draw. He's got a little reminder text.
Look at that. What a nice lizard.
That's so nice. He's like, hey, FYI.
Yeah, get that desert out of your library. Try to draw an action spell. Speaking of deserts.
Yes.
Deserts have returned. Because we've had one in the history of Magic.
Have we really?
Yeah, just one for Arabian Nights.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Desert proper, and it was reprinted in Time Spiral. And they elected not to reprint Desert Proper because it actually is very problematic.
Is it called Desert Proper or
no.
Desert?
Okay. Just Desert.
Okay. Hello, Desert Proper.
The original true desert.
Okay, got it. The true desert.
Yeah, the true desert. So Desert's a land. You won't run into it, so it's not such a big deal, but it taps for one colorless mana, and you tap it to deal 1 damage to target attacking creature. Play this ability only during the end of combat step.
Okay.
Wow.
It makes it difficult to attack with 1 toughness creatures.
Yeah,
sure does.
And it makes it difficult to attack with creatures that have toughness just a little bit less or a little bit more than your power even. So you can block a 4/4 with a 3/3 and then kill it with desert.
Cool.
Nice.
But they elected not to reprint that. Instead, they printed a bunch of different deserts.
Yeah, that card seems good.
It's actually really good. It doesn't come into play tapped, and it lets you cast Eldrazi. And so it would be actually problematic. So instead we have stuff like Painted Bluffs, which is, you would look at it and you'd say it's just another filter land. It taps for colorless, one generic and tap to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. It's just like any other filter land, but it's a desert. So Shefet Monitor there can find it. Things that care about deserts, there's a couple of them in the set. We'll care about Painted Bluffs.
I care about deserts. They're an important part of our ecosystem. This has been my 5th grade report. Thank you.
So there's several different deserts in the set. There's one that makes zombies, one that gives -2/-2. They do a variety of things.
Cool. It's very flavorful.
Yeah.
And I like that a desert makes zombies.
Yeah.
Like they're rising up from the sand.
Yeah.
Well, because that's
happened.
Yes, it did. Yeah. We learned in our Magic story recap last week.
Zombies.
Zombies. Brendan Fraser had to kill them, right?
Look, I keep Brendan Fraser on speed dial to kill anything that is bothering me. Spider, doot 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 doot, Brendan Fraser, get over here.
Do you guys remember the novel followed by the movie The Spiderwick Chronicles with Brendan Fraser?
No.
Okay, it happened, and the author of the original Spiderwick Chronicles books said that, I don't remember if it's a man or a woman, that said that they wrote them hoping that they would get made into a movie that Brendan Fraser starred in.
No way.
I don't know if that is an urban legend that I'm now repeating, but I have heard that story before in my life, and I am now telling you.
Wow.
We can now return to magic programming, but can
we never can after we've heard that.
No.
Oh, interesting.
We'll have to add Brendan Fraser now to our celebrity watch.
Putting him on it right now.
All right.
He hasn't been in a movie in a while, though, so...
Yeah, I know, but neither has Tommy Lee Jones. Nicolas Cage has been in 1 million things, yes, as we learned in our last Nick Cage watch.
Don't worry, we'll check in on them and update you on the show.
That's fair. The other thing that's back, Gods.
Yes.
I'm going to pick up Kefnet the Mindful, the blue god. There's a cycle of them, one in each color. They're animal-headed legendary creatures that are legendary creature gods, just like the ones from Theros. Mm-hmm. But they have some differences. So Kefnet is a 5/5 for blue and 2, which is awesome. Has flying and is indestructible.
Wow.
Similar to the Theros gods, Kefnet can't attack normally. Kefnet says Kefnet the Mindful can't attack or block unless you have 7 or more cards in hand.
Yes.
The Theros gods weren't creatures at all.
Yeah.
Where these gods, the gods from Amonkhet, are creatures.
Always.
Which means they can drive cars.
Yes. Gods driving cars. What more do we need?
I mean, they have to get from one place to another too, you know?
That's true.
Like, why not? I have these enormous, great, big, flappy bird wings, but I really want to get...
Let me hop into a Heart of Kieran and pilot it.
Let me get into this Ford Fiesta.
Well, I mean, you're capable of walking places, but you drive places anyways.
That's
so
very true. Oh,
reality
very
bomb.
True. Wow.
And all of the gods have an activated ability that helps engage their ability to attack and block. Mm-hmm. So Kefnet here has blue and 3, draw card, then you may return a land you control to its owner's hand.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You could return a desert and just be pinging all day.
Yes.
Just thought about that.
Yep. Value. That's what we call that.
That's value. We really dreamed of the desert deck on a few episodes ago where somebody just kills somebody with a desert that pings when it comes into play.
Yeah.
Kefnet. I say Kefnet because the single F is a V in Welsh, and it's usually in the middle of a word like that. Kefnet is going in this deck, is what I'm trying to say. Okay.
If your experiences were less broad and more just straightforward American, you'd pronounce this word better.
Yes, so true. And I wouldn't pronounce Llanowar elves so annoyingly.
Wait, can we go back to cycling very briefly?
Yeah, absolutely.
When does it happen?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Like, can I cycle a card whenever?
Pretty much whenever. Anytime you have priority.
So it's like, it's an instant?
Yeah, it's an instant speed ability.
Okay.
So you can cycle on their end step.
Yeah, that's a good question.
All right.
Yeah, it's pretty helpful.
Nice.
It actually means that holding up mana for counterspells and stuff is a little more valuable.
Yeah.
Because then you can just ship your cycling cards as well.
Okay, cool. I like
which
that.
Which I know is something that you want to do.
All the time.
So do you want to do, we've covered cycling. Shall we do another mechanic?
Yeah, let's hop on to Aftermath. We covered cycling and the gods, which is mechanical, mm-hmm. and deserts, which are mechanical.
Yes, yes.
I want to hit some of the new stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the new big headliner, Aftermath, right?
Aftermath.
It is, if
sounds
split
like
cards,
a cologne.
If split cards and Flashback got together and had a love child, it would be Aftermath.
Yeah,
yeah, that
you're
is.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
One passionate night in Kaladesh.
One passionate night with two of the best mechanics of all time.
Wow, yeah. You've just made a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Two mechanics.
two of the best mechanics
the
of
best.
All time. But I'm thinking of car mechanics.
Yeah, like, yeah, car
this
mechanics for sure.
It's a movie about car mechanics.
And there's like some kind of car fixing competition.
Yes.
And they're going up against each other before they realize their true love.
I actually just want a recreation of the mechanic scene, the best mechanic scene from My Cousin Vinny. That's a trick question.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, man. You should see that movie.
Putting it on the list under Brendan Fraser, which I did literally write down.
So aftermath. Aftermath cards look very strange. The one that I'm going to talk about is Failure to Comply. Mm-hmm. And so it's two cards kind of stapled together, and one of them turns sideways before that happens. Failure, which is blue and one for an instant, return target spell to its owner's hand, which is something we might talk about anyways. It gets thrown on counterability. It lets you pick up your own spells and they try to disallow it or whatever, because you can return your spells to your hand so you can get another crack at casting them. And it does interesting things. But if you turn it sideways, then you have Comply, which is a sorcery for single white. Aftermath. Cast the spell only from your graveyard, then exile it. So similar to Flashback, if this spell goes anywhere but the stack, it gets exiled.
Okay.
So if your opponent tries to comply you and you failure them to return the comply, it gets sent to exile.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And so you also can't use this to rebuy your own.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I actually wouldn't have thought that's what would have happened.
Right, exactly. And so this is definitely a thing to point out, that this card itself points out the way that these cards work.
Okay.
And Comply says, choose a card name. Until your next turn, your opponents can't cast spells with the chosen name.
Ooh.
Which you probably just returned a spell to their hand with failure on their turn, which you then can comply to buy an extra turn against it.
Interesting.
Yep, that's the straightforward thing to do on these cards.
Yes.
Is just cast one half and then cast the other half.
Yeah.
From the graveyard. You can mill them to get access to them, just like you had with Flashback.
Yep.
Which is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And some notable things about split cards, because these are split cards.
Yes.
They are two cards. Whenever they're in a zone other than the stack, they have all of the characteristics kind of jammed together. This is a recent change.
Card is both an instant and a sorcery.
Yep, it's an instant and a sorcery. It costs blue, white, one.
Okay.
But
that is a change, right?
Yeah, that is a change. So it used to be that it had both mana costs at the same time.
Okay.
Which was kind of weird.
Yeah, and then you can do broken things.
Slapping them all together.
Yep, everything's, all the characteristics are just jammed together. One notable thing is that it has two names at the same time. It doesn't usually matter that much, but you notice how Comply says choose a card name.
Yeah.
You can name Failure or you can name Comply.
But you cannot name Failure to Comply.
Yeah, Failure to Comply is not a single card name.
Interesting.
This is all on one card, but they are two different names.
Gotcha.
Okay. So you can comply them and name Failure. You can comply them and name Comply, but you can't get both halves.
Gotcha.
Anybody who's not a Magic player who's listening to the show, brain just exploded. Yeah.
It was worse when they had two sets of characteristics at the same time.
Yeah, I do agree. Like, even though you could do some silly broken things, like with breaking and entering and Emrakul, and I saw somebody play that deck once.
Bird Brain.
Yeah. But this makes more sense, you know, just on its face, on face value.
Yeah, and it's just cleaning up some rules that probably should have always been this way. And it kills Bird Brain, but it takes a bunch of the cards and makes them playable in decks with Cascade. I don't know if you've seen how this is going to impact, like, Living Death, which is a deck in Modern. So Living Death couldn't really play any of the split cards, and now it can play a bunch of the split cards.
Oh, okay,
Because Cascade says, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal something with converted mana cost less than or equal to whatever the Cascade number is.
Yeah.
And so you'd Cascade, and you'd Cascade 2 if you saw Wax or Wayne, then, well, Wayne has a cost of single white, so it had a converted mana cost of 1.
Gotcha.
But now it has a converted mana cost of 3, so you
Cascade right past it.
Okay,
which people have been making a big deal about, because suddenly you can play all of these split cards. You can play Dead or Gone, Wax or Wayne. There's a bunch of random ones that might be relevant in Cascade decks in Modern.
Nice. Very, very cool.
That suddenly you get access to.
Yeah.
Excellent. So not only are we getting some new rules for this Amonkhet set, but keep your seatbelts fastened. We're getting rules for other formats too. Vroom, vroom.
this set actually has a lot of stuff that might be playable in Modern. It's cool. Very powerful. I'm going to talk about the other weird difficult mechanic, which is Embalm.
Okay.
Embalm has led them, it led to them printing the most tokens ever.
Yeah.
Yes.
I kind of am, I'm a fan of this.
1 million tokens.
Because I love tokens and I'm like, yeah, free cards.
Catherine Heigl and 27 tokens.
I would watch that. What if there were actually 27? It's not that many.
It might be that many.
But I'm getting every Embalm token. Do you hear me?
That seems reasonable. Yeah, they've only ever printed usually one sheet of tokens, though they might have gone to two sheets of tokens for this set.
Wow. A lot of tokens running around.
A lot of tokens. So I'm going to talk about one of the Embalm rares. Temet Vizier of Naktamon. I'm just going to call him Tem.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a Tem, nickname. Tem is a 2/2 for blue white. He's a legendary creature human cleric. And at the beginning of combat on your turn, target creature token you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn and can't be blocked this turn.
Okay.
Which seems like a kind of card but boosts token strategies.
Whatever,
does fine. But can't hit himself because he's not a token.
Correct.
Unless you embalm.
So he sees himself.
Yes.
Because he comes back exactly as he was.
Pretty much. Embalm has an associated cost. In his case, it's blue-white 3. Blue-white 3, exile this card from your graveyard. So this is like flashback for creatures, even more so than Unearth, which was flashback for creatures before. Like, this is just straight-up flashback for creatures. You exile this from your graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except that it's a zombie in addition to whatever types it had before, and with no mana cost.
Oh,
and you can embalm only as a sorcery.
Nice.
So can somebody counter your embalm?
They could disallow it.
Disallow.
It's an activated ability, so that most of the things won't be able to counter. Basically, just disallow stock went way up in standard. Because it can counter a lot of the random things from the set.
Okay,
nice.
And it makes a token copy. There's an ultra weird embalm card, Vizier of Many Faces. That embalms to become a token. It's like a clone. It copies something as it comes out, right? It can embalm to clone something. And it has a whole lot. Like, its text is really hard to understand if you don't know what it's trying to do. You may have Vizier of Many Faces enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield. Except if Vizier of Many Faces was embalmed. The token has no mana cost. It's white, and it's a zombie in addition to its other types.
Wow. Wow.
Okay, so it's telling you that the first time it copies, it is copying everything about it.
Yep.
And when it comes back in embalm copy, there's no mana cost, etc.
Yeah, there's no mana cost. It's white. It's a zombie now.
Okay, got it.
Basically, you make it into a mummy that's a copy of something, just like you make any other thing into a mummy normally.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I like how there's a new rarity in Amonkhet, ultra weird.
We have common, uncommon, rare, mythic rare, ultra weird.
Oh,
ultra weird. I've definitely seen multiple people try to read Vizier of Many Faces and go, I don't actually understand what this card does. Is it white? No. Well, if you embalm it, it is. Okay.
Yeah, that's tricky.
It's the strangest embalm card, I would say. A lot of the other ones are just fine, reasonable creatures. The cat is great.
Oh, we love the cat.
So great. It's not. I don't think it's actually very good.
It just went back to living its life the exact way it had before.
Yep. No differences.
I'm trying to do its paws.
Hello, I'm a cat.
Just the, paw on paw.
People think I'm great.
You know what you just reminded me of? When I was doing my impression of this cat, it is time for our, this episode is cutest card, grossest card.
Oh,
this
is true. Wow.
So we gotta add that into the mix.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, all right. Sorry. All right. Putting it on the sketch right under Brendan Fraser.
Grossest card is going to have some options.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Become lightly acquainted with some of them already. Unfortunately.
I don't remember. Do you choose a token for grossest card? Because there's a pretty gross token in this set.
Oh, man. We haven't ever discussed it.
We've never made a hard and fast rule. I kind of made a rule for myself that I wasn't going to choose a token.
Because you didn't choose that gremlin token last time?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think I've made a rule for myself.
Yep.
All right. But your rules don't apply to me.
No, Megan can do whatever for grossest card.
I can do whatever I want.
And I also made myself the rule that it has to be like the focus of the card. What is the cutest thing in it?
Yep.
Which is really hampering me this set because there's that adorable, which I found it was like a crustacean, or what'd they tell me? It was some kind of snake thing the bug-eyed,
like, the zombie turtle, what looks like a zombie turtle.
So I can't choose him because that would be against my criteria.
You know, I also made a rule for myself that whenever I touch a doorknob with my left hand, I have to slap my own face. Moving on.
Brutal. Moving on. We're going to talk about Exert.
Exert
is sweet, and they could put this in basically any set. It will come back someday. So Exert is just basically a thing that lets you exert things while they attack. So I'm going to choose Combat Celebrant because Combat Celebrant is probably the coolest exert creature. Red and 2 for a 4-1 creature human warrior. If Combat Celebrant hasn't been exerted this turn, you may exert it as it attacks. Basically, as it attacks, you get to choose, exert it or not.
Right. So when you're declaring attackers is when you have had to have said this.
Yep. During that time, before your opponent gets to choose blockers or cast spells or anything.
Okay.
Gotcha.
You just make the choice up or down on exert. When you do, so if you choose to exert him, it sets up a trigger. When you do, untap all other creatures you control. And after this phase, there is an additional combat phase.
Ooh. Cool. I love an additional combat phase. What can I say?
And exerting does a thing when you choose to do it, though. It says that they don't untap during your next... exerted creatures don't untap during your next untap step. Notably, if you untap it somehow else, if you there's a aftermath card that untaps target creature on the front side.
You can exert it again?
You can exert it again, or it just doesn't have a drawback meaningfully.
Right.
Or giving it vigilance. Tangible virtue, what's the name of it? Always watching.
Always watching, yeah.
Always watching is in standard right now. Well, it gives your non-token creatures vigilance.
I know, I'm so excited.
It's very good with exert.
Fingers crossed.
Because exert doesn't tap it. No, exert just says if it would try to untap during your next untap step, it won't.
It's sleepy.
Yep. They're just going to take a nap. They're double tapped, basically.
And I think it's important, like Wizards is printing out these little tokens that you can put on something that says you exerted it or whatever. I think that's a good idea because you don't want to find yourself being like, oh, crap. Even though the exert usually gives you a pretty good payoff that you probably will remember, it's just something you don't want to.
It's incremental. Like there's a common exert creature that just gets +1/+1, right?
Oh,
there's another common exert creature that just gets flying.
Right.
And so your payoff might not even be a... Like, it's incremental.
You might not remember as much.
And so you just manage to get through on one attack. And that's fine. With the rares and the mythic rares, the rare that puts a creature from your hand into the battlefield with this mythic rare combat celebrant that gives you a bonus combat, you will remember that you attacked your opponent twice.
Yeah, so just give yourself some kind of reminder. I don't know if you just, like, want to put a piece of paper on it or something. I don't know. To remind yourself.
Just use a die. Or the punch-out tokens are going to be in a lot of booster packs. And those are going to be great.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Combat Celebrant, notably, if he attacks with other exert creatures, will untap them for you. So you can exert Combat Celebrant and all of your other creatures.
With exert.
Ooh.
And they'll untap.
And they'll untap.
Cool. Right.
Because exert happens during combat, then he untaps them.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
And then you can exert them a second time during that same turn.
Yeah.
And they only skip one untap. Because they just say the single next untap step that you get. So if you exert a creature twice in a turn.
Yeah,
it only gets double tapped once.
Gotcha.
Okay. So we've got exert, embalm, cycling, aftermath. Now we're going to talk about a couple of the other interesting cards that are in the set.
I actually want to talk about a new card subtype.
Ooh, subtype. All right.
An enchantment subtype, cartouche.
Cartouche.
Ooh.
That's how you say it. PSA, cartouche.
Yeah, cartouche. It's not car touch.
Card touches.
It's not cart ouch.
Are you sure?
How sure are you?
I have a pretty good experience with cart ouch. like I'm just not very good at steering in grocery stores.
Yeah, you've gotten several bruises.
I have run over my own foot a couple of times. You know, it's just like it's a rough deal out there for me.
Yep. So the cartouches. I'm going to pick on Cartouche of Strength. It's a subtype of enchantment that doesn't do anything on its own, which
harsh.
Is, yeah, it's just a marker for trials to pay attention to, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Cartouche of Strength, green and 2 enchantment or a cartouche, enchant creature you control. When Cartouche of Strength enters the battlefield, you may have enchanted creature fight target creature an opponent controls. which means that they deal damage equal to each other for their power. And enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has trample.
Cool.
The reason I want to talk about specifically about Cartouche of Strength is it has a drawback compared to the other cartouches. Mm-hmm. If they have an instant speed disenchant, they can remove the buff, but that fight is a trigger and you pick the target while it goes in the, when it goes in the stack. So you cast Cartouche of Strength, trigger goes in the stack, you pick a target thing to fight, they disenchant your cartouche, you lost your +1/+1.
Yeah.
And then you might, it might lose that fight now.
I see.
So be aware of it. It's a thing that can happen to you.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Good to know.
The other cartouches for the most part don't have problems like that, where they where disenchanting them at instant speed can punish you heavily.
Yeah.
The Cartouche of Strength, you can get got.
Okay.
Get got good.
The cartouches are rewards for completing the trials in a thematic sense in the world.
Yes.
So trials are enchantments. Trial of Solidarity, white and two, enchantment. When Trial of Solidarity enters the battlefield, creatures you control get +2/+1 and gain vigilance until end of turn. When a cartouche enters the battlefield under your control, return Trial of Solidarity to its owner's hand.
Nice. Mm.
So this is the payoff for having that random long word that you can't pronounce very well jammed under your cartouche cards, is if you play a trial first and then play a cartouche, you rebuy the trial so that you can recast it.
Yeah.
Trial of Solidarity, notably, it locks in the set of creatures that get vigilance and the bonus at the time the trigger resolves. So if you play Trial of Solidarity, then another creature,
yeah,
it won't get +2/+1 in vigilance.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which is definitely something to pay attention to, especially when you get up to like 6 mana or whatever, and you're like, Trial of Solidarity. They're like, resolves, I don't have a counterspell. You're like, sweet, I get this creature as well. Well, it didn't get the bonus. Probably not relevant unless it has haste.
Okay.
But there's a common red guy that taps to give a thing haste. So you can give out haste pretty
just frequently. A common red guy.
Yeah. I'm surprised they never printed him before. Like, he's totally new.
Oh.
They've never printed a 1/1 for single red that taps to give haste.
Oh, that is kind of surprising, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It seems like a simple, clean, very red card.
Yeah. It's like, hey, here's the dude that does red thing.
Yep.
And it's hard to find clean, elegant, non-fancy cards like that they haven't printed.
Yeah.
So it's pretty neat.
So let's talk about cards from Amonkhet that are particularly tricky or have something that you wanted to mention, Rob, because there are ones that are more complicated than others.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird ones. I'm going to hit New Perspectives because that's the one that talks about cycling. New Perspectives, blue and five enchantment. When New Perspective enters the battlefield, draw 3 cards.
Oh,
what a
Megan's in.
Right? Six cost, but it's a 6-cost enchantment, so it's not like...
That's true.
6 for drawing 3 is like, you know...
I mean, I'd rather be drawing 4 for 6, but...
Yeah. Opportunity.
Opportunity, and at instant speed. So this is 2 drawbacks compared to opportunity. But it has another line of text.
You don't have to tell me.
It has another line of text. As long as you have 7 or more cards in hand, you may pay 0 rather than pay cycling costs.
Okay, yeah, this is weird because you can just, like, throw cards away.
You can cycle any card. Note that when something talks about a mechanic cost, it means the variable mana cost of the mechanic.
Okay.
So, like, technically discarding the card to cycling is a cost.
Yes.
That's not what it's talking about.
You still have to discard.
You still have to discard.
You have to get rid of this card, buddy. Yeah.
You have to cycle. You have to, you know, actually discard your cycling card. But you don't have to pay any mana. You just pay 0, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
So, build a cycling deck, I guess?
Well, it's a reprint of Fluctuator that's designed to be really bad. Because Fluctuator was... super dumb, like super ultra dumb. That card was a mistake.
Judge Rob, calling it like it is, since a couple years ago.
Well, every cycling card in Urza's block was cycling 2 mana, right? 2 generic mana.
Yeah, this is, it's not always cycling 2 this set.
Cycling costs vary. There's that lizard with cycling 4 that we were talking about.
Right.
And so they range from 1 to I think 4 is the high cycling cost in this set.
Cycling costs also vary depending on how fancy you want your bike.
This is true. If you want a fixie or if you want a 15 speed.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
It's going
to
be different.
And you know what? Like, it's always worthwhile to pay for a new cycle is what I found.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one
I
of those
for
purchases.
A long time, but I was really happy when I did pay that cycle cost.
Good.
Yeah. So the Fluctuator reduced all cycling costs by 2 mana.
Oh.
And everything cycled for 2 mana.
I see.
So you could just like you,
you could it, just it, chuck yeah. cards away.
Yeah, and it cost. It was a 3-cost artifact.
Wow,
wow, so that's pretty good.
You're just
good.
Like 3-cost artifact. I'm going to put all the cycling cards from my library into my graveyard. And your opponent's like, that seems bad for me. You have a plan, right? And you're like, yeah.
Nice. Lame death. I see you've got a card pulled up that is full of spice.
Yes, Glorious End.
Yes.
Yes, Glorious End is extraordinarily spicy. Red and two, instant. End the turn.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
What this does, end the turn has a bunch of stuff associated with it that actually spells out everything it does.
Yeah.
It tells you to exile all spells and abilities in the stack, including this card. The player whose turn it is discards down to their maximum hand size. Damage wears off. End this turn and until end of turn effects end. Basically, we skip to the cleanup step. We won't do end of turn triggers.
I see.
It's just like
done.
Yep.
And so if someone had like, say they, we had the old 4-mana Gideon and yep. they had plussed it to make it a creature. It's like, goodbye, everything.
Yep. Hey, my turn now.
Yeah.
And you can counter spells in the stack. You can just exile their spells.
So can I like do something after this is cast?
Sometimes.
Okay.
So normally,
I was thinking of like, what if I hadn't activated my Planeswalker yet or something?
Well, then no, you're, well, that
you're doing done
this,
for.
Yeah. So the only thing that you can do is if something triggers during the end step, then a player gets priority. Or during the cleanup step, then a player gets priority.
What triggers in a cleanup step?
Madness cards when you discard for having it cards in hand.
Oh, I see.
That's mostly the only thing that's going to trigger in right now. Is stuff like that.
So even if you have an end of turn trigger.
End of turn trigger.
It goes away.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the second part of this card.
Oh boy.
We are okay. 3 words in to this card.
Just making sure. Just
double check. So Glorious End actually has an end step trigger.
Okay.
At the beginning of your next end step, you lose the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's your, yep. You better have a plan. Is what this card says.
Yeah.
It's functionally really similar to a lot of cards like Final Fortune and Warrior's Oath from Portal Three Kingdoms.
It reminds me of like Pact of
Negation.
Negation.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, this is a pact. I'm going to cast this, end your turn. I'm going to play Skip from Uno, but it says I lose the game if I don't win the game on my turn.
Brutal Uno.
But
jeez.
Yeah.
Play this with my grandma.
Note also that Glorious End, because we're talking about end step triggers, mm-hmm. you can jump that end step trigger.
Nice.
By following it with another Glorious End.
So if you play Glorious End on your turn.
Yes.
You're jumping right to your opponent's turn.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate, but.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'll figure this out.
Yes.
But you got to do stuff probably.
Yeah, that's true. You're not going to cast it on your own upkeep.
Well, maybe if you were jumping over a Pact of Negation trigger?
Maybe. That's true.
Ah.
I'm going to upkeep Glorious End myself. That sounds like a euphemism.
Sure does. Welcome back, Euphemism of the Week. We missed you, and you didn't think Megan would be bringing it to you, did you?
No. Anyways,
there's another way to dodge this. Gideon of the Trials is in this set, and he's sweet. He's white 1, Planeswalker Gideon, starts with 3 loyalty. These are all things that I like. He has a +1. Until your next turn, prevent all damage target permanent would deal. Kind of like a watered down Kiora plus. 0, until end of turn, he becomes a 4-4. He likes fighting. Prevent all damage that be dealt to him. He's indestructible until end of turn.
Classic Gideon.
Yeah, he becomes a Gideon, basically. And 0, you get an emblem. With as long as you control a Gideon Planeswalker, you can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game.
Yeah.
Nice.
He mostly says all your Gideons are now Gideon Jura, because I don't know if have you played against Gideon Jura much?
In like Cube and stuff.
He is unreasonable. Like in limited, he basically just says your opponents cannot win the game. While Gideon is on the battle.
That's already how.
Oh, that's true, because
Gideon
they have
is.
To attack him, right?
Right.
He can make them attack him.
Oh, yeah, that's
He comes out, he +2s, goes to 6, and says, you have to pick me instead of them.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, attack him for 4. All right.
And it's plus him, whatever.
Yeah. Plus him again,
sucker.
Play some blockers, and you have to attack, and you must attack him, so I get to kill your guys with my blockers now. And he's,
I think it was it Craig Wesco who made this joke, and potentially other people. He said, isn't it funny how the last ability on this Gideon is just its flavor text or something?
Yeah.
It's just, you can't lose.
Yeah. But with Glorious End, you could actually, on their turn, Glorious End, to end their turn. Go to your turn. Cast a Gideon.
Emblem.
The emblem. Go. Trigger doesn't kill me. All right. We're safe now.
Nice.
All right. I don't know what, you know, reason, I guess. I guess somebody will figure out a reason for doing this. Well, because you countered
their spell with the Glorious End and probably got the common as well.
Okay, okay.
Because, you ended their turn, right? And so they cast something reasonable. You Glorious End to exile it from the stack.
It's just so weird. Like, I don't normally associate a red card with doing that. So
right, exactly. Yeah. It's very strange.
It's a very blue thing to do.
It's a very red, you know.
Like, I will go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, I will stake my game on countering that spell. Weren't you doing that anyways because you're playing red? Whatever. Look, I'll figure this out.
Yeah. So this brings me to a quick plug in the middle of the show, which is that Meg and I recorded a video, which was top 10 worst rares to open an Amonkhet sealed.
Yes. Guess which one of these two cards is on that list?
Spoiler alert. One of those two cards.
It's not Gideon.
It's on that list. And you can go over and watch it, youtube.com/MTAcast, to see what we think the top 10 worst rares to open your pre-release are. Anyway, continue, Rob.
Wouldn't it be a bottom 10?
You know, it's a top 10 worst. The bottom 10 worst are like the best 10.
At some point, we'll have to make a video called Bottom 10 Worst Rares.
People are like, what? These cards are all sweet. And we're like, yeah, that's what we're saying.
That's why we call them the bottom 10.
It's double negative.
Get on with it.
Good work, English language.
All right.
All right. So I'm going to hit As Foretold next.
Yes.
Because this card is hilarious. Blue and two, enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on As Foretold. Mm-hmm. Once each turn, you may pay zero mana rather than pay the mana cost for a spell you cast with converted mana cost X or less, where X is the number of time counters on As Foretold.
Nice.
Yes. Free spells. Free spells all day.
Okay.
And note that it is each turn is the first thing I want to point out. On your turn, you get to play one spell. So if it has three counters on it, on your turn, you can play Gideon. And on their turn, you can then disallow their spell.
Ooh.
Oh, you can do it
each turn.
Oh, I see. Okay.
My turn, your turn, her turn.
On their turn, it still has to be an instant, though.
Yeah, you still have to be able to legally
cast it.
Yeah. It's a spell you had to have been able to cast anyways.
Word.
If you are complied into not casting the spell, As Foretold doesn't let you get around it either.
Also, you actually need the card in your hand. You can't just be like,
make it up.
Like, yeah. I know this
card. Excuse me, I invent a spell.
Yeah,
it has converted mana cost.
Yeah, mental magic. The other thing, people are going nuts about this in Modern because it lets you cast the mana costless spells like Ancestral Vision.
Yeah, ooh, that's true.
Because they have no mana cost whatsoever. As Foretold says, yeah, you can go ahead and pay zero. Put a zero up there instead of whatever it had up in that corner.
Ooh, nice. So you can just be like Ancestral Vision all day.
Cool. Yeah.
It's pretty reasonable. You play As Foretold, you Ancestral Vision, say go, they do something irrelevant, you go back to your turn, you're like, it's at one now, I'm going to Serum Vision this for free.
Nice.
Drawing cards.
Guess you blue players need your spells to be free instead of paying one.
Yeah, honestly, it probably isn't going to go into a blue-based deck with Ancestral Visions. It's probably going to be casting Restore Balance. Because Restore Balance is balance.
Oh, yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, being able to, and As Foretold gets left behind because Restore Balance doesn't see enchantments. So it's conceivable that you could actually just like ship all your lands away, restore balance on three, and then play the rest of your game with no lands after you destroy all their permanents with just As Foretold.
Rude. Rude.
Seems conceivable. Not necessarily a good deck, but
you know that famous movie quote, seems conceivable.
Have you watched many movies?
It's The Princess Bride.
It has Brendan Fraser in it, right? It's a version with Brendan Fraser. Brendan Fraser says, seems conceivable. Yeah, absolutely.
Was it a one-man show? Like Brendan Fraser's all the rules?
Yes, yes.
I would watch
Brendan Fraser's one-man Princess Bride.
How does he
all day?
How does he do the wrestling day. A giant or carrying people up the cliffs of insanity?
You'll have
do
you know to what? See it.
It's part of the magic of the show.
Look, okay. It's in some fringe festival.
Okay. Movie magic, Brendan Fraser.
And in that case, in a fringe show somewhere, it's a person pretending to be Brendan Fraser playing all of the roles of Princess Bride.
Yes.
It's genius.
Sold out immediately.
Would watch. All right. I would pay up to $15.
But not $60.
I could be convinced to pay 16. Mm. Okay, do you know what? Up to $18. I would not pay 19. Pay up to $18.
We have a creature as your next card.
Harsh Mentor. Yes.
Ooh.
The flavor text. Can I read it?
Yeah.
Fight through it. Which reminds me of my dad's famous saying growing up, pain is only weakness leaving the body.
I need you to know that your dad didn't make that up.
I know. He just said it all the time.
Yeah.
He was an army man.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds military.
Yes.
Marine or just regular army?
Just regular.
Okay. So Harsh Mentor is a 2/2 for red and one. Mm-hmm. Creature human cleric. Whenever an opponent activates an ability of an artifact, creature, or land on the battlefield, if it isn't a mana ability, Harsh Mentor deals 2 damage to that player.
Yeah.
And so this specifically calls out a certain class of abilities, mana abilities. Mm-hmm. Mana abilities aren't abilities that cost mana. They're abilities that make mana.
We talked about them on our show a couple weeks back. Yes,
indeed.
But the big deal is Harsh Mentor won't stop creatures from or lands from making mana. They tap their lands for mana. Those are mana abilities.
Gotcha.
If they use one of the deserts that like produces a zombie, it didn't make mana. It made a zombie. So they're going to have to take 2 from Harsh Mentor.
Gotcha.
And any activated ability is something that has a colon in it. It has cost colon effect.
Gotcha.
Unlike all the exert creatures don't have activated abilities. They have a static ability that generates a triggered ability.
Gotcha.
And like Embalm, not activated.
Embalm is activated.
Is, sorry.
But it's from the graveyard.
From the graveyard, so it's...
So it's safe.
It's fine.
So it doesn't get seen.
Yeah. Harsh Mentor only cares about things in the battlefield.
He's patrolling the battlefield alone.
That makes sense.
Alone.
Yeah. That makes sense, actually. Yeah. But it does affect fetch lands, right?
Yes, it affects fetch lands. It is harsh against fetch lands. Like, this is going to be a sweet card.
Says take 2 in addition to taking that one.
And probably take another 2 in modern.
So much damage in boggles from my fetch lands. It's insane.
Yeah. I was at San Antonio, and I was playing a version of Abzan that played Dark Confidant and Bitter Blossom.
Ooh.
I took a lot of damage.
Wow. Yeah. Stop hitting yourself. Am I right?
Well, it was fine. I played Soren Solemn Visitor, and sometimes I would pick up like 14 life in a combat. Great. My opponents would be like, you're at what, 6? And I go, Soren... +1 attack with fairies and Dark Confidant. They go,
That's right. You brought a spicy brew.
It was pretty fun. I was 4-5 at the end of the day.
That's awesome.
We finally finished out, which matched our record, I was 5-4 at the end of the day, which matched our record. We were 1 win away from day 2-ing. When we played Peach Garden Oath, the wheels came off. Like, they beat us so badly, we racked 2 losses after they beat us.
I mean, look, that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah. We were featured.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah,
nice.
We were featured, and we looked at, pulled it up. I was like, we were playing against Turtenwald Jensen Duke. We said, uh-oh. Sweet, giggling fangirls. Now we're going to go lose some
So people go watch the replay.
Don't go watch the replay. The only match that was on camera was our middle match, which was Jacob versus Huey. And they were both playing Eldrazi Tron.
Okay.
And it turns out the Eldrazi Tron mirror is miserable.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure.
It's miserable to watch and it's miserable to play. And... Yeah, Huey drew a little bit better, and thus he won.
You put up a good fight.
Mm-hmm. We did. I should have won my match, but Reed Duke in game 2 drew triple Death Shadow on turn 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I hope you don't have Maelstrom Pulse. He lays them out, and I'm like...
I don't.
I don't have Maelstrom Pulse. I looked for it. It's not there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that card seems like it's going to find a home somewhere. Harsh Mentor, sure.
And it'll probably even be fine in standard. There's a lot of activated abilities running around.
Yeah.
That are doing stuff.
Next up,
Hazoret's Favor. This is not a rules issue. This is actually a Magic tournament policy thing. Hazoret's Favor is red and 2. It's an enchantment. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may have target creature you control get +2/+0 and gain haste until end of turn. If you do, sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So this is straightforward. Just you get to hand out +2/+0 in haste to a creature every turn on your enchantment. The thing with it is it's an at the beginning of combat trigger.
Yes.
Yep. The way that we have
this old chestnut.
Yeah. The way that we have combat structured is say that I'm attacking you, right?
Yeah.
Or I want to attack you. I say I want to go to combat.
Right. Jeez, we invited you over.
Yeah. Well,
Yes. Talk about rude. But I mean, he's asking me nicely.
Yeah, you can say no. You can say that you want to do something before I go to combat.
I would like to put on my hockey pants, please.
Yes. But so you get the chance to do something. And if you say that you aren't doing anything, then we're going to combat. That's the way that works most of the time in limited, constructed, almost every combat that happens is I say, I want to fight you. And you say, cryptic command. Or, no, it's fine. Punch me. And so that's the vast, overwhelming majority of combats.
Mm-hmm.
The way the turn structure works is during the pre-combat, during every phase or step, both players have to pass to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's main phase, I have to pass, you have to pass. Then we go to beginning of combat step, I have to pass, you have to pass. Is mm-hmm. the technical interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to ask twice to go to combat, it would be super stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like yeah. Every time if I say, I want to go to combat, and you say, sure. And I go, I want to attack. And you go, no. You have to ask again.
That's like when you ask if somebody wants the last bar in Minnesota.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Are you sure you don't want the last bar?
It's
Do
it's
you caramel. Want the last bar?
It's caramel.
It's caramel. It won't get stuck in your teeth, though, because I made it real soft. Megan's like, this is my life now.
Yep. Yeah, this is where I elected to live.
Yep.
I was not born here.
Yep.
Could have gone anywhere.
You don't have to ask twice in Texas.
Yeah, it's true. You should go watch My Home Companion.
Sorry to y'all eaten.
Nothing Garrison Keillor says is an exaggeration in a Prairie Home Companion.
Accurate.
He doesn't even do satire. He just does documentary reporting of Minnesota.
That's right. He just reads straight from the newspaper like Wobbegon.
Yep.
It's kind of awkward, actually. but so Hazard's favor. It has a beginning of combat trigger.
Yeah.
And it has a targeted beginning of combat trigger.
Yeah.
This is the first thing that you have to do during the beginning of combat step. And your opponent probably doesn't want to do anything in your main phase. As in, they really never want to do anything on your main phase. In fact, they want to wait for you to pick a target for that trigger.
Yeah.
They just don't want to do anything before this happens. So they... When you go to declare attacks with Hazard's favor, you need to call out your creature before you give your opponent the chance to respond.
Mm-hmm.
You need to say, I want to go to combat and hit this with Hazard's favor.
Yeah.
Or Hazard's favor this in combat.
Yeah.
They can, if they want, interrupt it and do something in your main phase.
Okay.
But we've set up the default combat trigger to work in the humongous amount of combats that don't have a Hazard's favor on the battlefield.
Yes.
Or other similar things.
Right.
Like Serac the Hunt Caller.
Yes.
Behaves the same way.
Okay.
Toolcraft Exemplar.
Yeah. Toolcraft Exemplar doesn't target.
Oh, that's true.
And so you don't have to pick a target right away because gotcha. What determines when a trigger is missed in a competitive tournament is demonstrating awareness at the first time it's relevant.
Gotcha.
And Toolcraft Exemplar, the first time it's relevant, it's while it's resolving.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Because your opponent can respond before it resolves, but it's not relevant to you until after it resolves or maybe even when combat damage happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Is that your final card? Oh, no, you have more.
Oh, forgot. Got actually a bunch more.
Okay.
That was the last one.
Okay. Let's do it.
Let's speed through these a little bit.
Okay.
So Shadow of the Grave. It's an instant for black and one. It says, return to your hand all cards in your graveyard that you cycled or discarded this turn.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just seems straightforward. You cycle some cards, you pick them up with Shadow of the Grave. But in standard, Madness is a thing right now, right? From Shadows Over Innistrad Block. Shadows mm-hmm. Over Innistrad Block. And they specifically call out in the release notes for this set, if you discard a card that has Madness but elect not to cast it, Shadows of the Grave will be able to find it.
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons that we caution judges don't make rulings before this release notes come out.
Yeah.
Because they change the rules specifically for this card. So that if you elected not to cast your Madness cards.
Yeah.
If you did cast a Madness card, if you discarded something and then with Madness and cast it, Shadow of the Grave won't see it.
Gotcha.
Because
it went there from you casting it.
Yeah. It went there from the resolution of the spell, if it was in a sorcery. Gotcha. Or if it's a creature, it probably went to the battlefield and then maybe even got killed. But every time something moves zones, it technically becomes a new object.
Yeah.
Shadows of the Grave there's some technical stuff behind it, but it can see Madness cards that you didn't cast at all.
Good to know.
Cool.
Next up is our Nissa. New Nissa friend.
Yeah, the other Ooh. Planeswalker in the set. Green, blue, X for an X loyalty planeswalker. And I actually don't care about any of her abilities for the most part. I care about that X.
Yes. Don't we all?
Sound just like a guy on Tinder, Rob.
Well, I mean, guys have a reputation for a reason, right?
Look, baby, all I care about is that X.
I don't know what X symbolizes in this. No, me neither. He didn't care about her abilities, I guess. Yeah, well,
she has some neat abilities, but they're not anything, like, really new.
I mean, like, look for those new abilities, Rob. Yeah. Don't settle.
So, Nissa Steward of Elements has an X loyalty. All the X's on the card are the same, basically. So you announce it with a value of, like, 4. So you pay green, blue, 4. She'll enter with 4 loyalty counters.
Yeah.
And once she enters the battlefield, those X's set to 0. You picked a value for X that was on the stack. Permanents will see what they were cast for with X, and then it stops mattering after that point.
Gotcha.
And she'll just be a 2 converted mana cost card.
So Abrupt Decay would be like, I can kill that sucker no matter how many counters she came into play with.
But it is unlikely that you'll be able to spell snare her.
Gotcha.
Because on the stack, she'll count that X towards her converted mana cost.
Right. Cool. Okay.
And then, I mean, her 0 count, it does think based on her loyalty, but we've seen that before with Gideon, the bad one.
Gideon the bad
man,
one.
Man, I remember Gideon the bad one.
Yeah. There's so many Gideons. I also want to talk about the other thing that's coming back, which is -1/-1 counters.
Yes. Ooh.
So this set does not have +1/+1 counters, which are the normal. Because
why +1/+1 something when you can -1/-1 at you guys?
Amen.
Yep. Especially your own creatures. There's a lot of -1/-1
yes, counters that's very true.
Creatures in this set.
Yes.
Normally the creature modifying counters is +1/+1. The only creature modifying counters in the set are -1/-1.
Smart.
So when you're in limited and you see a counter on a thing,
it's always a minus.
So we have some cards like Crocodile the Crossing, though, when we're talking about putting counters in your own stuff. It's a 5/4 for green and 3 creature Crocodile. It has haste. When Crocodile the Crossing enters the battlefield, put a -1/-1 counter on target creature you control. So it can give that away to a different creature, which is pretty sweet. You can use it to, like,
take these.
Here you go.
Yep. This 1/1 was doing nothing for me anyways. You can have a counter. I'll be a 5/4 haste.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is a question that I asked in a show, which seems pretty straightforward. Like, you can put, say you have a 1/1 and it instructs you to put 3 -1/-1 counters on a creature. You can just put them all on that 1/1.
Yep, because it doesn't distribute them or anything. It just target creature,
all right,
do this thing to
more it. More dead, got it.
Yep, make it super dead. And this is going to be a thing that people are going to do a lot of, I think.
Yeah.
Where they super dead a creature in order to get a bigger creature. But
super dead.
Aren't we all just super deading creatures to get bigger creatures?
Super dead.
But the other reason that they don't have +1/+1 counters in this set is because +1/+1 counters, -1/-1 counters interact really weirdly.
Yeah.
We haven't had this in a long time in Standard. But if something has both types of counters on it at the same time, you cancel out the counters until you only have one type of counter left.
That's right. I remember this from like the Modern Master set.
Yeah. And so if you look at, say, Scrounging Bandar, who's our favorite cat monkey.
Yes.
He's a 0/0 for green and 1. Scrounging Bandar enters the battlefield with 2+1/+1 counters on it. If you use your Crocodile the Crossing to put a -1/-1 counter on Scrounging Bandar, what you're actually just doing is removing a +1/+1 from Scrounging Bandar, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so you'll get the 2 counters on it, they'll cancel off, and it'll just have 1 remaining counter, which is a +1/+1.
Nice.
Note also, Winding Constrictor is a card that people have been playing in Standard. Snek is great.
Snek deck's real.
Snek deck's real, but probably don't play any of these things that hand up -1/-1 counters in Snek.
It's going to double it?
Crocodile Crossing puts more.
Yes. I see.
If one or more counters would be placed on an artifact or creature you control, that many of those counters plus 1 are placed on that permanent instead.
Brutal.
Yeah, it's not good for you.
Why are you so mad, Snek?
Yep. Yeah. Snek not happy.
Yes.
Snek get boop. No boop, Snek.
No boop.
No push on Snek.
Yeah, no push on Snek. So be aware. Probably don't play Winding Constrictor with your Crocodile the Crossing.
Noted.
PSA, everybody.
Noted.
Let's take a peek at Twitter to see some of the questions that people have for Judge Rob here.
Okay. Do embalm creatures have white identity for the purposes of EDH?
No. They don't have a white... unless they had a white mana symbol on them otherwise. So, like, the Heart Piercer Manticore is a red embalm creature. It embalms for red mana. Mm-hmm. It has red color identity. Color identity is based on mana symbols on a card.
April asks, if all of the layers were sandwich ingredients, which ones would combine to make the tastiest sandwich?
April!
So
should have known.
I think for right now, you can just pick your favorite sandwich.
My favorite sandwich is a Reuben, and I'm trying to figure out which layers would correspond to that.
Oh, nice.
I mean,
so you got your
bread
got
at the top and bottom.
Breads.
Right. So bread is probably control changing. Sauerkraut probably is power toughness switching because, yeah.
It is polarizing.
Well, sauerkraut's great.
I agree.
A Reuben's also a perfect machine made out of imperfect parts. Like, it is all, like, second-tier ingredients or third-tier ingredients, but it combines to make a better sandwich than first-tier ingredients.
That's what I put on my dating profile.
A perfect machine made out of imperfect parts.
That would be really weird. Anyway.
Let's see. Can we use something like Goblin Dark Dwellers to cast Aftermath cards?
You can. So Torrential Gear Hulk is another thing in Standard. I'm actually going to use that because yes, that's probably more likely to happen. Torrential Gear Hulk lets you target an instant in your graveyard and then cast it.
Yes.
Basically. If either half is an instant, Torrential Gear Hulk can target it. Then you can cast either half because you're choosing which side of a split card to cast.
Nice.
And if you are then casting the Aftermath portion, so if you Torrential Gear Hulk failure to comply and cast comply, it will get exiled. Aftermath says if you cast it from your graveyard, exile instead of send it.
Gotcha.
So Goblin Dark Dwellers will let you cast Aftermath cards with the condition that the converted mana cost of the two summoned sides has to be three or less.
Gotcha.
So you could cast Failure to Comply.
Yeah.
But you couldn't cast Mouth to Feed.
Right.
No hippo tokens from him.
Yeah, gotta do your math.
Jem says, I have no questions, but I'm excited to see Judge Rob again. That guy is awesome and super informative.
Thanks.
Endlessly positive.
Yeah. Love it. How does Nest of Scarabs work with infect or wither creatures? Do the creatures put the counters on other creatures, or do you?
Sometimes.
That's like a weird existential question.
Are the creatures putting the counters on, or am I putting the counters on?
Let me look up Nest of Scarabs quick.
Nest of Scarabs, Megan's got to be on your short list for grossest card.
Do you know what? I've got the winner.
Oh, do you?
Oh yeah, I do.
Okay. Ooh, and it's not Nest of Scarabs?
It's not.
Oh, wow.
It is worse.
Okay.
It is worse.
It's so grody. All those little scarab beetles are crawling up. Oh gosh, I can't even think about it. It's like fear factor.
Whenever you put one or more -1/-1 counters on a creature, create that many 1/1 black insect creature tokens. So it depends on the effect that's putting stuff on it. Wither is actually combat damage that's placing the counters on it.
Okay.
Which is not actually a player doing it.
So you may be putting those counters on, but you're not the one putting those on.
But if something deals non-combat damage with Wither, then it's the controller of the effect.
Okay. Wow.
So
there's Puncture Blast is an instant that deals 3 damage that is Wither. Puncture Blast is putting the counters on the creature.
Okay.
It probably won't ever come up.
I'm putting that in the part of my brain that is set to be dumped at garbage day.
You would actually just have to be Puncture Blasting or using what's the name of the giant that has infect? There's a random red giant that has, it's a pinger with infect. If you pinged your own creatures with a Nest of Scarabs out, then you could put out 1/1s. It probably won't ever come up.
Okay.
Does Enigma Drake count some Aftermath cards twice because they're an instant and a sorcery?
Enigma Drake is our little Izzet friend, friendly little Izzet Drake has beautiful Drake, wings. Oh,
yeah. Sorry. I'm talking over you.
That's okay. I was buying you time while you searched for it.
Yeah. So Enigma Drake actually cares about cards. Enigma Drake's power is equal to the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard. Each Aftermath card is only a single card.
All right.
So it doesn't matter how many types
it
has.
Even though you said earlier in the show it was two cards?
So it has two different card names.
Okay.
It's a single card.
Wow. All right. If any of the gods are already attacking, but their clause to attack stops, what happens?
Darn.
They're already attacking.
Yes.
You're getting dealt that damage, buddy.
Yep.
Too late.
Their condition only checks during the time that attackers are declared.
All right. Let's see. We already went through is cycling at instant speed. Yes.
Yep.
If cycling counts as a discard, why are there cards that read cycle or discard?
My bet, they're going to have things that cycle from places other than the hand.
Gotcha.
What?
This, like, this future proofs it. Someday, if they have cards that have like that have cycling from the battlefield, two mana and sacrifice them, draw a card, but it's named cycling. Then nice. this would trigger
crazy.
Off of
that. Okay,
there you go. So it's like a fail safe. They're like, well, maybe later.
Yeah, someday, someday we might do this.
Does Approach of the Second Sun have to resolve either time?
It has to resolve the second time in order to do its thing.
All right.
So Approach of the Second Sun, for people who are listening at home.
Yes. Oh, yes. Is the most build a crazy deck card in the whole set.
It's actually super silly. Yeah. White and six sorcery. If Approach of the Second Sun was cast from your hand and you've cast another spell named Approach of the Second Sun this game, you win the game. Otherwise, put Approach of the Second Sun into its owner's library seventh from the top and you gain seven life.
So it has to resolve the second time you cast it. If you cast it the first time.
And somebody like counters it?
No. You failure your own Approach the Second Sun to return it to your hand.
Oh my God.
Note also that if you try to win the game but can't because your opponent has a Gideon emblem, you won't gain any life.
Wow.
So if you cast your second Approach of the Second Sun with a Gideon emblem under your opponent's control, you'll try to win the game and nothing will happen. You won't gain any life.
Wow.
Sad.
Sad.
I'm definitely going to failure my own Approach of the Second Sun now, though. Thanks for the tip.
For 9 mana.
Yep, 9 mana. No big deal.
This is how your limited decks.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
Can Time to Reflect be cast into the Declare Blockers step, or does it need to wait until after combat damage?
Time to Reflect, one of the creepiest and scariest arts.
Ooh.
For anybody who's claustrophobic.
Oh, man, is this reverse zombie? Oh, no, you're being shut in a coffin. That's amazing.
They're putting you in that little...
Sarcophagus. So it's single white, instant. Exile target creature that blocked or was blocked by a zombie this turn. And they're asking if you can cast it during Declare Attackers?
Let's see. Oh, gosh, where did it go?
In Time to Reflect.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Be cast in the Declare Blockers step, or does it need to wait until after combat damage?
You can
damage?
Do it before combat damage. You can cast it during blockers before damage happens.
Yeah.
Block with a zombie, nuke their thing.
All right.
Sweet. That's going to be sweet in a zombie deck.
Yeah. It's actually just going to be pretty reasonable and limited, like, as just a card that you want in some percentage of your decks, because all of the embalm creatures are zombies.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's not unreasonable to just have a zombie randomly.
Let's see. Can Time to Serve exile any creature that blocked or only those that blocked mummies?
You mean Time to Reflect?
To Serve?
They say Time to Serve, but I think they're talking about Time to Reflect.
Okay.
So exile target creature with another condition on it, that blocked or was blocked by a zombie this turn.
So
you have to, it has to have gotten in a fight with a zombie, or be in the process of getting in a fight with a zombie.
Let's see. We had the same question about Torrential Gearhulk and Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Yep.
Let's see. For Glorious End, if you avoid the initial you lose at the end of your turn, will that effect remain at the end of the next turn or fizzle?
It's a single trigger. You can actually also disallow it.
Ooh.
You can stack that trigger, disallow your own trigger, and then pass the turn to them. This is a weird deck, and I don't expect it to ever happen. But there's a lot of effects in Magic history that can counter triggered abilities. Stifle is the...
Right.
Is the counter target activated a triggered ability? Void Slime, etc. You can also put that trigger on the stack and end the turn with Sundial of the Infinite in order to dodge it forever.
Because
Sundial of the Infinite ends the turn, but you can only use it on your turn.
Will Embalm trigger Prized Amalgam?
Prized Amalgam. Zombie.
It says that if a creature entered the battlefield from a graveyard, then it comes back.
But it's not a creature... entering the battlefield from the graveyard. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, if it entered from your graveyard, or you cast it from your graveyard, and you did neither of those things, the token didn't come from your graveyard. It came from nowhere. Just poof, zombie.
All right.
Yes.
Like spontaneous poof combustion.
Zombie. Yep. And so the zombie comes out of nowhere, and you didn't cast anything.
Yeah, because it's not actually a card like coming from your graveyard onto the battlefield or whatever.
Right.
And that's all of our questions.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Thanks, everybody, for sending your questions in.
You know, I flew us through those.
That was great.
Rip, roaring pace. Keep it up.
We're going to talk about our cutest card and grossest card in a second. But, Rob, if people have more questions for you, how can they reach you?
They can send me an email. robit@gmail.com is the best way to contact me. I will do my best to come by and answer any questions that are posted on the video once it goes live on YouTube.
Awesome.
Sweet.
And I'll probably do a couple passes during the week.
Cool.
Nice. There you go, guys. Well, thank you so much, Judge Rob, as always, for espousing your knowledge on our unknowledgeable ears.
I try. I mean, they're reasonable ears, but I wouldn't consider them educated.
So nice.
I
really appreciate that. I've always liked to think of my ears as unreasonable.
It is award show season.
Yes.
Which means that it is time to pass out our own awards of the magic sets. And in this case, it is the Amonkhet time for grossest card and cutest card. There are some gross cards.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's the one that we were just talking about, the claustrophobia one. Like, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, scary.
That's pretty bad. But it is, without a doubt, in my mind, Scarab Feast.
Scarab Feast. Come and take a bow, you disgusting card.
As Judge Rob said, do you want to be both a mummy and covered in bugs? Like,
no.
No. No, I want really neither don't. Of those things.
Really
I
don't.
I want neither of those things.
This is also a strictly better print of a rare.
Oh.
Really?
Yep.
Exile up to three target cards from a single graveyard, cycling black.
Yep.
All right.
Single black. The rare costs a black and one.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, but doesn't have cycling.
It does have cycling.
It does have cycling?
For two mana.
What?
Ah.
It's otherwise the same card.
That's kind of cool.
All right. Maria.
Yes, so I'm going to read to you a long list of runners-up. Because the set was so very cute, it was really hard for me to make a decision.
Okay.
So we've got some runners-up. First up, Initiate's Companion, which is a very mad little kitty that's like hissing and real mad, but also still cute because cats can be mad and cute. Runner-up to Thresher Lizard for being a cute little lizard on a rock that's going, who's just like sitting on his rock, sunbathing with his mouth open, being cute. Runner-up, of course, to Plague Belcher, because I mentioned him on the last show. Very cute, burping out a little bit of plague, just like all the cutest things in life. We have honorable mention to Blighted Bat, which is a cute little bat with lots of holes in its wings. Sorry, Blighted Bat, you got the disease. And now I'm up to my final two. And this actually came down to rarity, because I have occasionally awarded cutest card to a mythic. But I don't like to, because I kind of like, I want most people have the chance to play with the cutest card.
Wow, that's so magnanimous.
So
very, very democratic.
Thank you. Vizier of the Menagerie is our first runner up. The adorable snake with his menagerie wearing a vest.
Very cute.
Very cute.
Very cute.
Adorable. But unfortunately, a mythic rare, which bumped him down. If he had been a common, I think he would have won. But the
he
common
also would have been one of the most insane cards ever.
He would have
been reasonable.
Everything would have been broken.
The common card, which has captured my heart since I first saw it in the set very early on. I think we can all guess. Sacred Cat. Sacred Cat, congratulations.
Sacred Cat. Maria, I have to tell everybody, though.
What?
You know, you are really painting yourself into a corner with this no tokens rule. Because once again, the Sacred Cat token getting passed over because it cannot help the fact that it is a token.
Yeah, we talked about this. My self-imposed rules are now hindering my cutest card judgments. But, you know, I'm putting on my like, card. It is an actual card with a mana cost, etc. will win cutest card. I also want to give an honorable mention to the weird little bug-eyed crab thing. Snake, whatever the heck it is, who is easily the cutest thing on a card, but is not the actual card itself. Like, if that guy had his own card, winner hands down, okay? But Sacred Cat, congratulations. You're adorable with your cute little fancy paws, and your zombie version of yourself is equally as cute, if not cuter. So let it be written. So let it be cute.
Thank you all once again for joining us for an episode of Magic the Amateuring. But you can also listen to us next
Nailed
week
it.
And in the past. Thank you again also to Judge Rob for coming on the show.
Very welcome.
And giving us all of his excellent knowledge.
Yes. As always, you can find us on the internets, on Twitter, at MTAcast. Our website is magictheamateuring.com, on which you can buy playmats, t-shirts, and magnets of magnetic poetry related to the show.
That's right. You can also listen to this on our website, magictheamateuring.com, but iTunes also has it.
But you can be our friend on Facebook.
Yeah, but Stitcher is also a place where you can listen.
But you can become our Patreon on patreon.com for as little as $1 an episode if the show has given you anything that you find valuable and or fun and or dumb.
like this whole weird lesson on conjunctions.
I think you two have conjunctivitis.
Oh, it hurts.
Thank you so much to everyone who supports the show. It means the world to us. Thank you once again to Card Kingdom.
Yes.
CardKingdom.com/MTAcast. Get your stuff there, like your sweet boxes of Ammon Cat once they're available.
Like your sweet 100 copies of Sacred Cat.
Yeah.
To wallpaper your room.
You're going to need so many more than 100.
Now I have so many ideas for decorating.
Do you have like a really tiny room? Do you sleep? Is your room? Is it like a wraparound bed?
It's a crate. It's a
I sleep
is
in
it
a crate.
Sarcophagus?
Oh no! Thank you for listening this week, everyone. But join us again next week.